Back in 2005, we interviewed the Arabic interpreter Sergeant Kayla Williams. It was when her book, I Love My Rifle More Than You, came out. That book described the sexism she encountered while serving in Iraq. And one of the things that struck me about our interview with her was that, well, some of her remarks were almost flippant. Like her response when we asked her if she was ever afraid of being raped by other U.S. soldiers.
No, because, you know, I had a gun all the time. You always carry a weapon. It's pretty much a constant presence. But if a guy starts to cross a line, you may start to feel intimidated, but you still have a weapon.
That was 2005. Our producer, Charles Monroe Kane, wanted to check in with Kayla to see what she's thinking now about the war. And Charles, you reached her. What did you find out?
Well, I found out that during that previous interview, Jim, in 2005, she was dealing with a lot of stuff. Things she didn't want to talk about on her book tour, and certainly not with us.
Yeah.
Her husband was struggling with a severe head injury that he got in Iraq. She had post-traumatic stress. She even considered suicide. When I spoke to her this week, here's some of the stuff we talked about before the interview started.
It was an extremely trying time, and I, in a lot of ways, ended up relying on my military training of right place, right time, right uniform, and suck it up and drive on, and just using strength of will and discipline to get through situations.
That was before we got started, but there's more she has to say about the war.
I was asked to humiliate the detainees as a way to try to break their will. And part of what the person running the interrogations chose to do was to try to sexually humiliate them, so strip them naked in front of me as a woman. And there was some degree of physical mistreatment of the detainees as well. And it made me very uncomfortable. I thought it was wrong, but I didn't do anything during the interrogation. After it was over, I approached the non-commissioned officer in charge and said, I think what you're doing is wrong. It may be a violation of the Geneva Conventions. And I also think if anybody that comes in is innocent, they're a terrorist by the time they leave, based on how you're treating them. I don't want anything to do with this in the future. And he said, okay, and they didn't ask me to participate again. But I didn't take it to that next step of reporting it up the chain of command. And that's something that I have to live with, that I had a moral failing, that, okay, great, I didn't gleefully participate, but that doesn't mean I'm as good of a person as I thought I was. I didn't have the moral willpower or the ethical fortitude to, you know, to press the issue and to report it up the chain of command and try to make sure that something was done to change the circumstances. And I think in the long run, especially after the Abu Ghraib scandal broke and we saw that type of behavior was much more widespread than I realized, you shouldn't have junior soldiers making that type of decision in stressful environments when they've just watched their friends get injured or killed in a combat zone. They shouldn't be deciding how far they're allowed to go. These should be very clear boundaries that are set. And there need to be structural conditions in place to pull people out when they're in too challenging of circumstances for too long. There needs to be clear oversight. And we have a responsibility as a community, as a nation, to have the right regulations in place and to make sure that they're enforced. Unfortunately, I think the national dialogue on this has gone in the complete wrong direction. You know, you see people to this day trying to justify torture as a way to catch Osama bin Laden, or how far would you go, and the TV show 24 and this whole ticking time bomb scenario, and what would you be willing to do to save lives? I think it's gone in the wrong direction, and it's worse in some ways than when I first came back from the war in terms of our national dialogue on what is ethical, what is acceptable behavior. And in addition to the fact that I think it's terrible for us as a nation, and I believe gives more power to terrorists to use this type of misstep as propaganda in inciting their followers to do violence against the United States, I think it also overlooks what negative consequences it could have on those who are asked to torture.
Yeah.
Those who step over that line, who spend a year of their lives trying to break other human beings and then go home and deal with their spouse and their two-year-old.
Yeah. You know, Kayla, you're an individual. You're a human being. You were talking about your own morality and you didn't live up to your own ethics morality that you wish you would have. Can you do that in a war? I mean, is it possible? You're talking about these things
yes.
In a way. Is this what it is? But you think there is a way to have a moral and ethical war?
I think that it's possible for people to make ethical decisions, yes. There was just an article I read this morning about My Lai. And, you know, yes, there are people who made the wrong decision, but there are also individuals who made the right decision and said, this is wrong and you can't do it. And all of us should strive to be that person, to be the person to say, this is right and this is wrong, and I'm going to stand up to you if you're doing what's wrong. It's a lot to ask of individuals, yeah. But I think that we should raise our children to be that.
Yeah, you guys are tested more there, I think, with it. You obviously speak the language. You know the culture. You like the food. It's, you know, what you would know as an interpreter. Have you stayed in touch with any Iraqis since you left?
I haven't. I actually went back to Iraq as a civilian for a job I had later for a couple of weeks. And it was very hard to be there as a civilian, to not have a weapon, to not be part of the military system. It was very jarring, and I felt extremely insecure about it. I've read about Vietnam vets who go back as tourists. The tourist is probably too flippant of a word, but who go back seeking healing and closure. And I've thought about that a lot. And if Iraq reaches a point where, in terms of security, it would be possible for me to go back, it is something I'd like to do. You know, I have two small children now, and if Iraq is safe enough, I would like to take them with me there when they're teenagers and show them some of the places that I spent time, some of the places that were meaningful to me. And, you know, I do think about trying to track down some of the people that I met. I mean, when I was there, things just weren't, I couldn't just get somebody's mobile phone number. Things weren't that established because I was there as part of the initial invasion. But I think about the widow of the Iraqi man I saw bleed to death, and I wonder what happened to her. I wonder what happened to their children. I worry about whether or not they survived and what kind of life they were able to pull together after. And I wonder if there'd be any way, you know, in another 15 years for me to try to find some of these people and see how their lives turned out.
10 years ago, you were there during the invasion, 2003. When you look back at that now, are you proud of what you did? Do you think it was effective for our country, for you as a person? What do you think about the war?
For me, on a personal level, I met the man who became my husband, the father of my children. I would not want to give that up. I learned who I am, good and bad. I think it offered me the opportunity to have fairly significant growth intellectually and spiritually and ethically. You know, we talk a lot about post-traumatic stress, but there is a flip side to that is post-traumatic growth. And I think that my experiences in the war did open me to that. And also, there are individual acts that I'm ashamed of about my time in the war, but overall, I am proud of the fact that I did my best to be a good soldier and to do the right thing for my fellow troops and for the Iraqi civilians that I encountered. I'm proud that I was in the 101st Airborne under General Petraeus, who came to be known for his expertise in what came to be called counterinsurgency operations, that compared to some of the other units that were there, our unit early and vigorously was trying to make a difference, a positive difference, in the lives of ordinary Iraqi people. And I think if more units had done that more vigorously from the beginning, it may have ended up being a very different occupation.
Kayla Williams served in Iraq as a sergeant in a military intelligence company of the 101st Airborne Division. Her book about her time there is called I Love My Rifle More Than You. Producer Charles Monroe Kane spoke with her.